Alright, so today we're happy to have Tomasz Hausl from IST Austria. This will be the first of four lectures. The lectures will be Tuesdays this time, 12:30, and Thursdays at 3:30, all in this room. We'll have dinners the two Thursday nights. You're welcome to join. The title of the lectures is Numerative Invariants of Higgs Moduli Spaces.
Okay, thanks very much. Should be a pleasure to be back. In fact, several of the early versions of these results, I think, have been announced here. This one, maybe things like 14 years ago.
You don't look any older.
No. I don't want to be fair with the newcomers, so I'm not going to assume the knowledge of all of those talks. But therefore, I don't really. In the first lecture today, anyway, I'm trying to give you a relatively simple introduction to the most studied aspects of the moduli space of Higgs bundles and how you can use this structure, which is the a natural sister action or U action on the space, to compute Betti numbers and cohomology of these things. So. Let me give you the plan for the four lectures so that you can see what we are up to. So really the aim is to compute things, to get numbers out of the geometry or the topology of the moduli space of Higgs bundles. And there are several ways or techniques that you can use. So in the first lecture, I'm going to discuss this approach by studying the natural circle action on the space and what kind of information you can gain out of that for the cohomology of the Higgs moduli space. Then on Thursday, we'll talk about the cohomology of characterized edges. Turns out to share the same cohomology as the Higgs moduli space, so at the end of the day, we are going to study the same thing. But it really looks very different geometrically. It is just the representation variety of the Riemann surface into a complex group, modulo morphisms. And then we use their finite field techniques, arithmetic techniques. But also, at the end, hopefully, I can relate back to those kind of ideas back to the world of the moduli space of Higgs bundles. So that is the plan for the lecture on Thursday. Then lecture three introduces another new type of varieties, Nakajima pure varieties, and we are going to, I will sketch you the proofs of two of Katsi's conjectures in the representation theory of universe using these results. And also at the end, I would like to use this setup to give you a very quick motivational speech for a recent computational Betti numbers of the Higgs moduli spaces, which is due to Schiffman. So that's the idea for the third lecture. And finally comes the talk, which is my recent work with Andrei Arsenash, and this will be about the equivalent Fermi algebra for Higgs bundles. And here again we use, even the question will be somewhat different, because until now everything was cohomology. Turns out this is meant to be sheaf cohomology of where it sheaves on the Higgs moduli space. But at the end of the day, we expect that we are going to be able to see as much as in the approaches before, and in what I am really hoping in the future is a big unification of all these approaches. Okay, so that's the plan for the lecture course. And let me start with first a list somewhat of a history of how Higgs bundles appear in the mathematics and physics in the literature, and basically give you some reason to care about them. So, okay, this is the title, I think, of a paper by Simpson or something like that, the Ubiquity of Higgs bundles. He wrote this in 1992, I think. And you see this is very early in the history of Higgs bundles. So this paper introduced in by now classic paper of Angel Hitchin, 1987, 30 years ago, a long time ago. And Nigel had a completely mathematical approach or question to a problem, to a setup which originates in mathematical physics. So he, with collaborators Attila, Zinger, and others, were studying before the problem of understanding mathematically Young-Mills instantons on R4. And he, as a differential geometer, were interested in what happens if you reduce the equations to two dimensions. So, and then you reduce it naturally, you are going to get the so-called Higgs bundle equations or Hitchin self-duality equations, which one of his discoveries was had this algebraic geometric object as their solution stable Higgs bundles, the ones we are going to talk about in this series of lectures. So the motivation comes from differential geometrical interest into equations of mathematical physics. That's what Nigel says about his interest. But there was no physical reason to look at these spaces, and for a long time it was not really discussed in the physics literature. In fact, instead it was, okay, and then of course another famous aspect, which was already clear in the very first paper he wrote, but then he went on discussed at the great length this integrable system, which actually is supported on the moduli space of Higgs bundles, and somehow this was an extremely important example of Higgs of this complex algebraic integral systems, and basically many of the examples we know today have an origin there. So that was an important aspect, and I mention it here because this will show up in the story. So then the next major date is 1990, when Simpson was studying what he phrased as the non-Lebesgue Hodge theory, now not just on any one surface, there is a one-dimensional curve, but on any variety. And so he has different interests, but he, when the variety was a curve, was really redoing or rethinking what Nigel did on any surfaces. Okay, so then comes, and again, perhaps a surprising application in a work by Billions on the Dreamfeld, probably still, so I'm not going to compute anymore. So in this work of Billions on the Dreamfeld, which I'm sure, is this already published? Not yet published, but I think you can find paper somewhere online. They have an understanding of certain aspects of the what you can or they might have called the geometric Lebesgue program, the quantizing nature system. That was really very interesting representation in terms of how you can quantize this integral system. So then it was really some physics already appeared, but not really that profound ways. For example, in the work of Donaghy Witten, a certain Hitchin system appeared, and also in the work of Moore and Yakovlev and Sofastri, moduli space of Higgs bundles appeared, but maybe just as an example for the computations they were doing. So it showed that there is some importance of these moduli spaces in supersymmetric H theories. Okay, so then really what changed, I think, that really the importance was this big work by Kapustin and Witten in 2005, which is almost 20 years after Nigel's paper, that the moduli space of Higgs bundles became the focus of a lot of work afterwards. They had this SGLT physics way to think about the geometric Lebesgue program and the geometry of the Higgs moduli spaces. Okay, so fortunately it was not over. We have, of course, you must be very familiar with this. Am I having the alphabet right? So, anyway. So then, of course, this work of Andy and his collaborators was a big and exciting thing for people like Nigel and others who were very much interested in the differential geometry. space. In particular, this natural hyperkeled metric, which was, and I'm afraid still, is somewhat mysterious, the structure of the metric in several senses, but they had a very mathematically speaking and very interesting and approach to try to understand this, and they probably had a lot of extra new ideas. They were looking at, mathematically, I think, certain heat invariants on some maybe all of the outside categories or manifolds attached to spectral curves, and they studied all crossing phenomena, and that surprisingly, this kind of information had a bearing on the form of the hyperkeled metric, which still hasn't been, I think, understood completely, but it was a very exciting new development. Then the arithmetic or the number theory strike back in the form of the work of Engel, who used the geometry of the modulus of the Hitching foundation, and basically more than that, he wasn't really just trying to understand the symmetries of the Hitching foundation, and that was surprisingly led to a solution of the fundamental problem in the actual Lagrange program, so it's different from the geometric one in that it has actual number theoretical applications and it's important in the original Lagrange program. So that was also very exciting. And for us, it's very important that I'm going to discuss some of this, hopefully, maybe on Thursday. Diaconescu and his collaborators have at least two big ideas how to understand the cohomology of the X moduli space, again, from DT invariants of a Calabria three-fold. Okay, and so I will discuss that on Thursday with some of you. And finally, for the last lecture, this is relatively recent, in 2015, Gukov and Pei have a new perspective. And what I understand, and I will understand this more by the time of my lecture Thursday, next week, that it somehow arises from understanding these kind of supersymmetric VH-typical computations, which was already done by Mouri and Krasovets-Opashvili, but somehow in a more geometrical way, coming from this famous theory X, which you must have known about already. And then with this kind of same kind of computations they did, they arrived at formulas for equilibrium spaces. Okay, so I hope, and by now I must say that there are many other appearances of the moduli space of Higgs bundles, and we still are not, the physics of this theory X in several aspects of it, you always find yourself thinking about the moduli space of Higgs bundles, and we are still not there yet where we would say that the VM physicists would have understood its relevance to their physics, and then all these invariants we are interested in are not yet understood what they mean for physics. Okay, so that hopefully gives you some motivation to stick to these talks. So first, I'm going to discuss some of the known results about the moduli space of actual bundles on any one surface or on a complex projective curve. And I will use the language of algebraic geometry, well, mostly because that's what I have been using for a while, but you have to know, or you have to remind yourself that the whole relationship anyway with physics, definitely, or there is this differential geometrical way to look at them, which is this gauge theory of connections on vector bundles on Neumann surfaces, is also very powerful, but I will stick to the algebraic geometry language and ideas. Okay. So, the setup is going to be the follows. We will fix a Neumann surface or a complex projective smooth curve. And we will, again, just for convenience, we'll fix the case and the genus is at least one. And we are going to study rank R vector bundles, so we fix an integer R. We will also fix the degree of the bundles, so that will be D. And because of important technical reasons, we will always assume that D and R are co-prime. And you will see soon why we will assume that. Okay, so then this moduli space, which is somehow one of the first moduli spaces studied by geometric techniques by Mumford, is the moduli space of isomorphism classes of semi-stable rank R and degree D vector bundles in C. So I mean, you should just think about this. I have some space whose points parameterize objects which I'm going to explain to you what they are. These, what are these semi-stable rank R and degree D vector bundles? So the construction, the way how you can put some extra structure on the collection of these objects, one you can do is via algebraic geometries and geometric invariant theory of Mumford. That's what we will be basically thinking about. And but you can also do this doing gauge theory, which is somehow closer to the origin of these spaces in physics, in mathematical physics. Okay, so what again is this semi-stability condition? I would like to remind you, you might have seen this already. So we will say that the rank R vector on D is semi-stable or stable if every proper subbundle of the E will satisfy that its slope, which is just the degree of the bundle over its rank, which is typically a rational number, that slope cannot be bigger, less than or equal to the slope of the And then if you happen to have a strict inequality for all such subbundles, then it will be called stable. Okay, again, there is this abstract theory of Mumford about GIT, and this condition arises naturally if you study just the whole collection of vector bundles. You have a natural way to start understanding what you should be in this term after. Okay, so now you see why we will be sticking ourselves with the case when B and R are co-prime, because in that case, this thing here, so the degree is co-prime to the rank. So this means that this is a modest rational where there is no simplification, and you cannot get the same slope with the vector bundle of the lower rank. So in that case, you can never get an equality. So if it's semi-stable, it's also going to be stable. And what it means for the construction, or for the moduli space, that every point in the moduli space representing a semi-stable or therefore stable bundle is going to be a smooth point. So the variety moduli space is going to be a one-singular variety. And by some other non-trivial reasons, you can also see that this variety is going to be compact. It's going to be a projective complex algebraic. Okay, so this is a famous, one of the most studied examples of moduli spaces. And then, okay, again, in the framework of general geometric invariant theory, you can ask in what sense it represents the moduli problem. And this one does it very well, in the sense that there is a universal object on the moduli space times the curve itself. There is a vector bundle over that, which is universal in the sense that if you restrict your universal bundle over any point in the moduli space, you can get back the bundle itself. So this is basically the most beautiful and the nicest situation you can have in geometric invariant theory. Okay, so then, okay, our interest is going to be trying to find invariants, and then we will be mostly interested in topological invariance of these moduli spaces, like, for example, Betti numbers, or more generally, like intersection numbers, maybe in the cohomology of the variety. So if we really want to know what the cohomology is, so I'm going to give you an overview to convince you that the cohomology of the moduli space of stable bundles, which we say we will always take with coefficients from the complex numbers, is well understood. It had been really studied a lot by many great people. So one of the first results about the homology was in the work of Harder and Simon. And here you already see this dichotomy of the subject. They did compute the betting numbers of the moduli space via finite field techniques. So they, instead of thinking about the topology of the moduli space of the complex numbers, instead they were looking at the same moduli problem over a finite field, and they were counting vector numbers over a finite field, and those kind of arithmetic information then gives back you what you were interested in, the betting numbers. So I just want to emphasize that this one was an arithmetic approach, and closely parallel to that, soon afterwards, Bhatia and Bott came a completely differential topological approach, differential geometrical approach, which is in many ways very reflecting of the work of Harder and Simon, but it was really this mathematical physics day to look at these spaces using gauge theory. And what they found a recursive formula for the generating function of all the Betti numbers. So these are the Betti numbers we are interested in, the dimension of the cohomology groups of the space, which is roughly, I like to say in a simple way, is counting the number of i-dimensional holes in the space. So it's really an enumerative in some sense. And then you form this general function, and this Poincaré polynomial is going to contain the information of all these Betti numbers. So one interesting outcome of these computations, which was in fact may have been first noticed by Zagi and Bachur. Zagi was the one who first saw the recursive formula, which was kind of complicated, but he managed to have a sort of closed formula for the result coming from the recursion. And he noted that, for example, the result depends on D. The first smallest example may depends. And I think this is pointed out in the paper. Was the case when the rank is 5 and D, the degree is 1 or 2, he noted that the result will give different polynomials. So this is an interesting feature, and I'm emphasizing this because we will have, in a way, a more rigid situation for Higgs models. We'll see that there the Betti numbers won't depend. Okay. So then the next question, okay, in this case we easily see now the Betti numbers at vacuum 81, there are two different ways to compute them. The more interesting or difficult question, if you just study the cohomology of the space, is the intersection numbers, are the multiplicative structure of the cohomology. And so then if you have a ring, you can think about this in several ways. You can, for example, think about this in terms of generators and relations. So the best is if you can first find nice generators. And in fact, Bhatia and Bott proved that the cohomology ring of the moduli space of stable bundles is generated by just this single universal object, the universal bundle, which lives on the product of the space at C, and now we compute all the term classes of this universal bundle, and there aren't many, right? This is rank n vector bundles here, term classes up to m, so the up to r, and so you have a finite list if you fix r, and then you have the cohomology of the inner surface, and so you will have a coefficient for each term class in a class here. You will have a finite set. If you fix the genus and the rank, you will have a finite set of universal generators in low degree, low cohomological degree. And they prove that they generate ring.
Is there a reason you don't use R in the notation of your space? I mean, it should be.
I should probably not use any extra stuff. I could have used R.
There's no specific.
No.
So these numbers, for example, the Poincaré polynomials, they're absolutely dependent on R2.
Absolutely.
I see.
So I show you, okay, I won't show you these results, but I show you for Higgs bundles R2 and 3, and you will see that they will be heavily depending on that R. You should think that R is 2 is special, it's always much easier. So in this case, 2, I'm not going to mention that on the slides, was already done in the work of Houston the IS2 case, it's somewhat similar. It's like SU2 is a simpler group than SU1 for some reason. It's the first case you want to study. But you can already see the difference in terms of the inversion generated, because if you have the fixed R, you will have much more generated sort of geometry already. Okay. So then you can either be interested in describing your ring as by generators, not minimal generators, and find all the relations between them, then you have the complete multiplicative structure, or an alternative or basically equivalent approach is to compute all intersection numbers among the universal generators. That is to take any subset of, or any multi-subset of the generators and multiply them together, and then if it's a top class, then you can integrate it from the organism and you get a number. So this this information, if you know all intersection numbers among the universal generators, actually contains the same, I mean, theoretically speaking, it describes you very easily. But the interesting thing here was that, yeah, I'm explaining here integrals and products of universal generators. The interesting thing was that this was conjectured by Witten, which again, the computation came from physics computations, which were somehow that precursed the requisites of the motivation maybe for Niaklasov, Shatashvili, and Moore to do similar kind of computations from X-minute spaces. So that's some physics in the conjectures, and then it was proved mathematically by Jeffrey and Kerwin. And then basically the whole program was completed by the cohomology ring by finding a different set of relations among the universal generators for A star ID. This was the work of Bernard Kerwin in 2005. And finally, because we will also discuss sheaf cohomology, not just ordinary cohomology, I must mention that the state of the art in computing sheaf cohomology in the moduli space of fixed bundles is the work of Telemann and Woodward, that they compute this kind of family, the formula of sheaf cohomology, in this case only a line bundle. So L, if I explain that in the next line, is some fixed, the ample generator of the pintar group of the moduli space of state bundles, which turns out to be introduced as a well-defined line bundle. And then, as I will discuss in the last lecture, it turns out to be highly non-trivial to compute, say, the dimension of the space of sections, homomorphic sections, or edge-based sections of this line bundle. And they developed a very interesting formalism, and then the result is much more general than just, so this is just, say, basically GLN, the structure group of the bundles, but they do it in a much larger set of groups, not just GLN. And also they can integrate more complicated or computer sheaf cohomology or index of more complicated coherent sheaves, not just line bundles. But why I'm also putting this here, because it makes sense in the sense that somehow when the k goes to infinity limit, you do get back intersection numbers. So this formalism should contain the same amount. Okay, so this is the classically known results about this moduli space of stable bundles. We really understand the cohomology in every possible sense there. But I'm going to introduce in a similar way the Higgs bundles and their moduli space, and I will show you one structure on them which you can use to have results about their cohomology, and then I will discuss what's known. Or the module space of Higgs bundles. Okay, so what is a Higgs bundle? Okay, because I'm not going to come from the original approach by Nigel Hitchin to describe the Higgs bundles as arising from the differential geometry of this four-dimensional material series to two dimensions. It will be hard then to motivate why you want to look at this, but I will just tell you to start with, and maybe as time develops, we will see how and why they are so tell you that the Higgs bundle is going to be a pair of objects. So one is just a familiar vector bundle on the Riemann surface or complex projective curve. And then additionally, you have this section of the endomorphism bundle, E tensor, the chemical bundle. So there's some sheet, some vector bundle, and then we just take a section of them. So this is what we will call a pair of such, we will call a Higgs bundle. And the reason this is called the Higgs bundle, which several people try to change back into Higgs pairs or something, because that would be more fair, because Higgs is a bigger but he actually used, Nigel did only use the verb Higgs field, and the reason he used Higgs field because it arises in an analogous way from the fourth dimension of Young-Mills equation, as the Higgs field in the Bogomolnik equation arises when you just reduce to one dimension. So it's the same kind of auxiliary field, but even that Higgs field is not really the Higgs field of the Higgs boson. About its system, and then it's a distant cuisine. So it's really a distant thing, but it has the same flavor. It's an auxiliary field on the attention to the vector. And then it was, I think, Simpson who called the Higgs bundle. Not Higgs, but it was origin bundle. Okay, so now we can develop, and people have developed after Nigel, who did the work in PhD, like Bautier bought for stable bundles. Geometrical language, but then you can also develop the corresponding algebraic geometry language. And or even the stability condition was already in Nigel's paper as well. So he found that the Higgs bundles which arises from the assumption of his equation, the stability equation, are not just any Higgs bundle, that they are actually semi-stable or stable. And again, what's the definition? Is the same kind of definition as for vector bundles. So you say that it is a it is semi-stable Higgs bundle. If for all sub-bundles there is an additional condition to take into account the Higgs field, now the so the Higgs field is roughly an endomorphism of the bundle. So I can talk about fine variant sub-bundles. So for all fine variant sub-bundles, you would want to have that the slope as B, which is defined exactly as before, is at most of the ambient bubble. You can be even nicer if you notice that the fine variant sub-bundle actually gives you what we call a Higgs sub-bundle, because you can restrict the Higgs field to the sub-bundle, and so on. You can, it's very similar, we discuss Higgs sub-bundles, and then it's the same condition for stability. Okay, so you have now this easy generalization, and in fact the right generalization. And then you can also use, again, geometric invariant theory, or H theory, as Nigel did, to construct the space of all isomorphism classes of semi-stable rank R degree D Higgs bundles on the curve. In the end, we insist on the case when R and D are coprime, just not to worry about singular points in the limited space. When R and D are coprime, semi-stability is the same as stability, and then the modulus space is really smooth. Okay, I don't know if I say this. So you can construct again these two different ways, and basically we stick to algebraic geometry because we also think about finite field methods, but also topological methods of doing the algebraic geometry so not convex, connecting the two words. Oh, right, I say. So indeed, if D and R are coprime, as we always assume, now every point is stable, so it won't have much trivial automorphisms. Space at those points is smooth, so it's smooth at every point. So instead of being projective as before, this space is, and this will be basically the source of all our difficulties, is not projective. It is only quasi-projective. And that's why somehow the same kind of techniques won't work or not won't work on the same way as for stable, the basic stable. But it is also somehow, in a sense, a fine module problem, in that you again have a universal Higgs bundle, which is a vector bundle here and the universal Higgs field over there with the same property as before, the Higgs bundle point here, and you rest sigma inverse of one bundle to that point times the curve, you do get back the semi-universal family parametrizing all the stable Higgs bundles. Okay, so that's great. So now you have a universal object, and we can hope, and then some of it will be known, that we will get the same kind of picture about the cohomology, the universal classes of the cohomology will be generators, etc. We will get to that soon. Okay, so I want to give you maybe a first example for a Higgs bundle. Maybe the easiest is to take just the stable bundle and take, say, the zero Higgs field, right? The zero is a section of that. And if the bundle was stable, then of course this one will be automatically satisfied for any sub-bundle, and even if the Higgs field was zero, then it's actually equivalent condition. So a stable bundle with a zero Higgs field, but in fact with any Higgs field, right? Because for any sub-bundle, this was true. If I have some Higgs field, it still be true. It's a weaker condition. So you notice that if you have a stable bundle, then with any Higgs field, you will get stable Higgs bundle. And you can actually analyze what's for a fixed stable bundle, what are the possible Higgs fields. And for that, I just recall for you a relatively easy observation from that is in Newstead's book to think about deformation theory of stable bundles. You can identify the tangent space at a vector bundle E with some cohomology group, the first cohomology group of this slack endomorphism bundle. And then if you know self duality, you see this space is canonically isomorphic with this H0 polynomial of the curve, with H0 with an endomorphism tensor, which is tensor canonical bundle. And so that's exactly a Higgs field. So the cotangent space at the point is exactly parametrizing for you the Higgs fields of a stable bundle. So this way, you see that we have found an effectively important subset of the modular space of Higgs bundles, stable Higgs bundles, namely those Higgs bundles where the underlying bundle is already stable. And this turns out to be an open subset. So the dimension of the stable, the Higgs modular space is twice the dimension of the stable bundle modular space. And this will be a dense open subset. So you can think about the whole Higgs modular stable Higgs modular space as a partial compactification of this. And we will actually see more of this idea of this partial compactification when we notice that there is a natural cis direction on this space. And what's the natural cis direction? Well, you can gain your clue looking at the cotangent bundle, of course, any vector bundle has a natural cis direction acting by scalars. Even if you think about this, that scalar just acts on the Higgs field. So, in fact, that obvious idea just gives us the natural cis direction on the Higgs moduli space by scaling the Higgs field by a non zero complex number. If you have stable Higgs bundles, so you will get after scaling the Higgs field. And I will claim that with respect to this cis direction, the space, okay, it's not projective, but somehow it's semi projective. It's projective in one direction. And I will discuss a little bit for you this idea of semi projective varieties and see how much of the theory of projective varieties when we think about homology will persist for semi projective. Well, some do, and so this is a useful technique to use the cis direction to study the homology of the space of these models.
Sorry, when you said this A equals C, then do the same as the
section
of the
physics.
Do we need like
to
take the dual of the thing?
So indeed, so you use set to identify this with the dual of H0 in exactly that space.
But don't we need to take the dual of the sheaf? Like isn't it like HN of CF is H?
There is a star there. So indeed, this is the tangent space. The cotangent space is the one parametrizing the
okay, sorry.
And then the cotangent bundle.
I thought you meant the tangent space was the same as this thing, but no, it's the tangent
space. The tangent space is this,
sure.
Which is the dual of that. Yeah. Okay. So this is semi-projective. So what is semi-projective? Now this is what we discussed in early on in a paper with on Torikai Kiragoradis, but it turns out that this is somehow a property of some of the varieties which appear in this kind of basically hyperkilar geometry. These spaces I am interested in are always hyperkilar or symplectic algebra. It is symplectic, like a potential property is symplectic, but this is somehow a further symplectic compactification. Okay, so it turns out to be shared by some interesting varieties, this property. So what is a semi-projective variety? And I mean a semi-projective variety, I always take a cis direction of my space. So it's not the variety which is semi-projective, basically, but it has to have a cis direction in respect to which it will be semi-projective. So it has a fixed, some cis direction, with respect to which there are two properties. We will want the fixed point set to be projective, proper, a bit more generally, a compact space, the fixed points. And the other thing you want is that if you start in any point in your variety, not necessarily a fixed point, any point, and you apply your the action C star, then you will get a whole orbit of C star. If the space was compact, you know, in this abstract sense, then of algebraic geometry, then you would have you can compactify the C star orbit to basically do the whole Riemann sphere, so you would have a limit in both ways. If you call the space semi-projective, in the cis direction, we will only assume to have a limit pointing at one of the ends of the cis star orbit. And so that's the idea. So you take the z and then you let lambda somehow go to zero in cis star. You act on it and you want to have a limit point, and there will be a unique such limit point for any point in the space. So that's what it means to be semi-projective. And you will see that it will share some of the properties of usual projective varieties. But to convince you that this is an interesting notion, not just an abstract interesting notion, I give you some examples. The one, of course, which is relevant for us is the moduli space of Higgs bundles. It was already noted by Nigel, I think, in the NS2 case, or RS2 case, and Simpson must have been the one this property in for any R, for example. Then, in this paper with Bern, we studied toric hyperkilar varieties, but in particular, we approached it through what we call semi-projective toric varieties, and this is just toric varieties which arises a vector space by an abelian group, say GIT quotient. So somehow, it's a nice class of toric varieties. They are not necessarily projective, but and then there is a hyperkilar analog of thinking about toric varieties, and those will also be semi-projective with some appropriate cis direction. And finally, another very interesting class, which is no longer a quotient, as the toric ones are Nakajima-Kuyt varieties. It's still a quotient of a finite dimensional vector, symplectic vector space with a symplectic action of a inductive group. It's still somehow relatively simple construction compared to the Higgs moduli space where someone's an infinite dimensional analog of that. But again, this is going to be semi-projective. Anyway, so this is, I think, nice, say, four classes of examples. So what can you do with such a semi-projective variety? So, okay, first what we do is that we name the components of the fixed point set to Fi is going to be the connected components of the fixed point set. And now you can wonder, for example, one thing, you can wonder about points. We know by definition of being semi-projective that the C star orbit will have a limit when you go to zero. And this will be a unique limit, so you can wonder in which component is it. And so you can collect those which flow, say, which will flow to that component, and that will be called UI. In particular, everyone in Fi is going to be there because it's a fixed point, it doesn't move. So it's somehow some, we will see that it is some kind of bundle. In fact, this is an affine bundle over the fixed point set. So topologically, for example, is trapped in many rounds. And the condition of semi-projectivity is that these strata, what I call the upper flow, but maybe it's numbers, so I'm confusing these two. Anyway, I call this upper flow, although these are things which come down to the fixed point set. So these things, you stratify your space by assumption of this semi-projective. And this stratification, as you can see, you can use for example, this is called the Bielinski-Birula decomposition. Then you have, in this case, Bielinski-Birula would have two such decompositions because he would be mostly working on projective varieties, but we only have semi-projective varieties. We don't know about the downward flow. Those points in DI is the collection of those points where the upper limit is in FI. So now, in general, this will be a smaller, it won't be the whole space. We will call the union of these things. This is still an affine bundle. If you now take the union, you will see that this subset, which turns out to be projective or proper anyway, because now you have limits in both directions here, this is going to be a nice proper subset. It will be typically a reducible variety, so kind of similar and complicated, but it's at least proper. It's called the core. Sobriety. In the case of the Higgs moduli space, this is a very important sobriety. It's called the nilpotent cone. It turns out that exactly those Higgs bundles will be in the core, proper sobriety core. Yeah, will be in the core of the Higgs moduli space where the Higgs field is nilpotent. So that's something to prove, but it is true, and this is called the nilpotent cone. So this core is very important for Higgs moduli space, but in fact we see, because of this decomposition of ideas on homology, it's really very important for all the other examples, this core. So what do we know about the homology of these semi-projective varieties? So the one thing we know is that the homology of the whole semi-projective variety additively can be computed from the homology of the fixed point set. So it's a sort of Morse theory, but formulated in an algebraic geometry language. Then you see that, so the homology of Fi is the same as the homology of Ui, so perhaps it would have been nicer to put Ui there, but this is the same, because now I have this decomposition, and this statement says that somehow, in some word, this decomposition on homology is additive. So we say that such a decomposition that is perfect. So this means, for example, additively, you can compute the homology of the Higgs space just by computing the homology of the Higgs point set. Apply some shift, namely the codimension of the upper stratum from Fi, then you get a computation for the Betti numbers of the total space. Okay, so another interesting property of semi-projective varieties that you can also think about the C-star Hilbert cohomology, which often could have not much relationship with ordinary cohomology, but not for semi-projective ones, because they are what we say are formal, equivalently formal, in the sense that you have an isomorphism, at least additively, between the equivariant cohomology and as a module over this, the two of the isomorphism. So what it means, for example, if you can compute the ring structure here, that will imply the ring structure there because you can just work about the six direction. And so this is an important property of semi-projective varieties, the exact formal. Then you have a related property of semi-projective varieties. It was basically already discussed in Kerman's book, which again was concentrating on the compact case, but she had a chapter about one compact case, and then you would have results like that. I think probably the equivalent formality was already there. Is that the C-star equivalent cohomology injects into the equivalent cohomology, into the the C-star actually is trivial on the Higgs point set, but it's still as a trivial extension of the homology. So this means that one thing we are trying to do understand is that there. Okay, then in the case of semi-projective varieties, somehow it still makes sense to think about intersection. So you see that the variety is non-compact, so there is no immediate notion of integrating cohomology classes, but you can do it equivariantly. So if you have two now C-star equivariant cohomology class, alpha and beta, then you can define, if you like, the intersection pairing as an equivariant in the equivariant sense as formally localizing to the fixed point set. So what we do here is that we just take the theorem of what and what, which is true in the case when the space is smooth and projective or compact, but we just take the same definition anyway, and it turns out to be a good and interesting definition. But what you will lose, which you still have in the compact case, that you no longer are, the result is not in the equivalent homology of M, but you have to localize by allowing Hessian functions in U. So the result is not going to be a polynomial in U, so U is the generator of H2 of the equivalent homology of M point, but you have to localize it like that. And then what's interesting, in order to relate the equivalent homology in intersection numbers, is that this pairing is still non-degenerate. And therefore, knowing the intersection numbers, you can recover the equivalent homology of the space, and by the second formality, you can then recover the homology of the space. So this is like a homology for a semi-projective, or is useful if you want to understand this generic homology. And then you can do other stuff with these semi-projective things. For example, you can compactify them by adding a divisor at infinity. So you just take the GIP quotient by C star at the high enough level, or the symplectic quotient. This will be a proper orbifold. And you can compactify with it your space, and this is called symplectic cutting. You can define a compactification of your space by adding this projective divisor at infinity. So you see that with just this simple idea about semi-projective varieties yields a lot of homological information, but also geometrically you already have a projective variety. Okay, slightly similar maybe, you will have more default similarities, but on homological level you will know that to the, I don't know what's going on. So you have a surjection for restricting from the cohomology of the compactification to the cohomology of M. And from this, it already follows that we will discuss these kind of ideas of where structures, purity, and stuff in that second lecture. And the cohomology of the semi-projective are is pure, so you don't see somehow exotic force theory on their cohomology. You can also see this in another way, which has been coming up here. Is I mentioned the core. You can prove that for a semi-projective variety, the core is a projective variety that is somehow easy or proper, and that it's going to be a deformation retract of your space, and that's a non-trivial result. But once you prove it, you see that the cohomology of your variety is isomorphic with the cohomology of the projective variety or proper variety, and smoothness and projectivity together will give you the again same result, that there is no exotic conjugates in the homology for the structures, which I will discuss that in more detail. So somehow the homology of a semi-projective variety is kind of very close to the homology of a projective variety in many projective ways.
Does that respect the ring structure as well?
What?
The deformation retraction to the core?
Yep. It's a homotopy equivalence.
But the ring structure you defined is the one you get from them.
You mean the equivariant?
Yeah, but it's fixed point.
Yeah. this thing will work with smooth varieties. So the core is not smooth, so. But yeah, but I think you can somehow develop. So if then we will move to K theory at the end, I think you can probably work with similar one as well. Okay, I hope that this will be over. So I wanted to finish by explaining to you how this C-star decomposition, the Bielinski-Bergova decomposition works for Higgs bubbles, and then I show you what kind of results it gives on the additive homology, and I will discuss some results in the end to motivate the further lectures later. Okay, so now we should be thinking about Higgs bubbles again. So I have Higgs bubbles. I told you that it has a nice C-star action by scaling the Higgs field. And I told you that you can understand the space fairly well by understanding first the fixed points, the fixed point components of the C-star action, and then understand the upper and downward flows. And then from this, you can glue the space together, and then you have ways to understand, say, the Betti numbers, but also you can say things about intersection numbers. Okay, so now let's think about what is the fixed point on the Higgs moduli space by multiplying the Higgs field with an N0 complex number. So what you want to say is that this Higgs bundle is the same as that Higgs bundle up to isomorphism. You remember in the moduli space, the point represented an isomorphism class of a Higgs bundle. So in particular now, there is a automorphism. For every lambda, there is an automorphism of E, after which you apply the automorphism, the Higgs field becomes lambda times V. But if you put these lambdas together, what you will get is a group action of C star, which is lambda star on E, if you take all these automorphisms as a group action on there. And then this, you can think about the decomposition with respect to various weights of the C star action, and then you will get a natural decomposition of E into one sub-bundle, which will be the weight spaces. Somehow you should think I label them like this, but in the weights will be somehow the opposite. So if you get from the assumption that you have a C star fixed point, you will get a decomposition of the bundle into the direct sum of sub-bundles. And the Higgs field is therefore this is the whole, the only way is that this can only go to the next one. So from EI and the syntax with 2 EI is going to end up in E2. So in general in EI, it will end up in EI plus 1. And so it's going to be lower triangular. And then the very last one is going to be 0. So in particular, this last one is going to be a Higgs bundle. Okay, so for every C star fixed point, you can do this decomposition, and so we will then this data we have is the decomposition into sub-bundles and numerical data. You can call the type the vector of ranks. It's an ordered partition of R. The order is there because the Higgs field remembers the order. The Higgs field tells you how to go from each one, from one to the next one. So to any fixed point, you have an ordered partition of R. And additionally, for topological type, you will also have an information of the degrees. So you have some degrees. You know that the total degree is D, so you have some degrees F to D. So these are the two immediate topological invariants of a fixed point set. We will call such a fixed point of this type, which is one degree. And then when you take them together, it turns out after a long work, many people's work, that this turns out to be either empty or it will be a connected space. I don't know if this is correct. But it will be a connected space. So when I say this, I actually mean a connected component of the fixed point sets of the C stars. It's not really need to show it's connected, but it is, turns out to be. And you can already see that if you think about stability, you can construct a bundle like this, a Higgs bundle. Immediately you have a condition on the degree here, and then its rank, because it's already fixed. But then the last two will also be a Higgs sub-bundle, and then etc. So you have many Higgs sub-bundles and you can compute their MDP, and that will be a bunch of inequalities, kind of complicated numerical inequalities, and this will be some immediate condition we will have on the on them. I mean, you know, it's as I project this, so you know it's there are finitely many components. So you will get this way to think about them. So let me show you some examples of these types. So the easiest is the case that the automorphism was just multiplying by C star or anything, and then X field must be zero. In that case for type R, that means that this is the case when the X field is zero, and then it will force the underlying bundle to be stable. So this type of exponents of type R are precisely the our old friend that would be space of stable bundles. So that's somehow the first fixed point set. The upper flow of this is easy to think about. It's just the cotangent bundle I told you. So the cotangent bundle, as it sits inside the module space of Higgs bundles, is the upper flow from this somehow this lowest fixed point of the C star action. So that's all our friend. But then there turns out to be the other extreme, which we can explicitly describe and we understand very well, is the case when is the composition in the sum bundles, in fact, is the composition in the line bundles, then it's the fixed point is of type 1, 1, 1, 1, 1 times. So in that case, we see that this bundle is determined, say, by the first one, E1, if you know what it is, then you just need to save the map from E1 to the next one, E2, tensor the canonical bundle. But maps between line bundles are really just described up to scaling by the divisor of that morphism. So you take this section of this bundle, the Higgs field restricted to EI, and basically the divisor here is going to give back the Higgs field. So if you know E1, and you know all this bunch of divisors, you can reconstruct your Higgs bundle. So it turns out that in this case, the moduli space can be identified in some old friends, the Jacobian of the curve, the moduli space of bundles, I mean, it should be D1, I think, offering a degree D1. And so it's a nice close, chronology, everything else. Well, I mean, we are not number theorists, so we don't care about difficult questions. Homology, it's easy. Then you have the symmetric products of the curve. The divisor really is determined by zeros on the curve, so basically you just take this many points on the curve, which might collide, but it's symmetric, so it doesn't matter the order. So you just take the symmetric product of the curve to this degree, and not this degree, which should be the degree of the first such, which should be the degree of the last. Anyway, so you have a very nice and easy way to understand this type of fixed points. And then the rest is much more difficult. But when R is 2, for example, no, when R is 2, then we already understand everything. There's only two types. The type 2, that's the module space of stable bundles in type 2, and the type 1-1, which is just basically the symmetric product. So we understand this quite well. Okay. And in this case, the only stability condition, the only Higgs-sum bundle is this last bundle of D2, and here is this only stability condition, and that gives you, you can see from this, you will have G minus one such components if I didn't make a mistake with the numbers up there. Okay, so in this case it's easy, so maybe I show you the picture of, so this is R2, and think about the C star action, you have the fixed point sets in, so now in the bottom you see the stable bundle of this space. Say D1, so this is just the stable moduli space, it's half of the dimension of the variety. You have the flow from this up, which is the cotangent bundle of L1, it's an open subvariety. Then you start to add more of these upper flows, so you have the G minus one of these symmetric products times the Jacobian. So the symmetric products themselves, you can divide by the Jacobian, sometimes we do that. And then you have G minus 1 and such CNG products. On the top, you actually have just the curve itself, degree 1, the same curve that you have the CNG product. And down here, I think you have 2G minus 3, or G minus 1, and then the dimension goes by 2 at every step. And then you get a smaller and smaller dimensional flows going down to that. So that's the picture for the PLMS keyboard or the composition when R is 2. You can also, much more interesting and difficult, is to think about the downward flow. So this we form what we call the core, highly singular and reducible variety. In this case, we have G components. And in fact, what I'm drawing is not the true thing. We don't really understand how these things intersect. But basically, everything will flow down and will somehow intersect the ones before in a complicated way. And the structure here seems to be very relevant for geometric guidelines, and this still is a really difficult and very exciting open problem to understand how these components intersect. But then you have the important core, it's some compact subvariety of half of the dimension, Lagrangian subvariety, the whole space is going to retract to that, basically using the compact flow. So that's the picture for Abis 2. For Abis 3, it's still relatively well understood. Okay, what are the possible types? You have type 3, that's the same kind of stable one, really specific type on one, just some products of synergy products and the Jacobian. And two new guys, 1, 2, and 2, and they are dual, so they have a similar description. And it turns out to be some previously studied moduli space of certain Bradwell pairs. And the Bradwell pair very quickly is just an empty vector bundle together with the section. And this had been studied by Michael Tadeus, where he was interested in the family problem. But then studied when you told them very well cohomology, and that was used as the USC to compute the betting numbers of these things by Goethen, and he managed to do that to get the result for the betting numbers for RSC. So let me now show you two of the results, which had been first the classical one by Nigel. Nigel managed to compute the betting numbers of the Higgs moduli space in exactly this feature by computing the betting numbers of the fixed concepts, computing the codimension of these upper strata, and then giving you this more skeptical formula, that one. So you have the bottom, you have the Poincaré polynomial of the stable bundle space, which was done by many people, like Ardenas, etc. So this is the familiar Poincaré polynomial, and then you get G minus one new terms. Okay. And so I just show you, and you know exactly what things are. And then Nigel put things together, and this is from his original paper. It's a little bit of cut and paste. This is the theorem. The formula is different here. I cut it off from the body of the proof, because this reflects more of this computation. The first term should be familiar if you have seen that the numbers of stable bound moduli spaces. This is the Poincaré series for the for 1G, in that case, it's a free algebra, multi-commutative algebra on the universal generators. Oh, by the way, we are fixing the determinant here as well. So it's somehow SL2, there is a Jacobian factor missing to the true result to compare what I'm discussing there. But the Poincaré polynomial of the stable bundle space has another term which somehow got stuck into the computation of this sum. And anyway, this is the result you get. And the last line we can worry about in this scope because it has to do with really the non-trivial properties of the SL2 versus the GL2 case of the non-existing here. Well, you see that's the result. Okay, so it's relatively nice, but it's not that easy to understand what's what. I show you now the result for RS3. Again, here, student of Nigel, my brother, Peter Goethen, was successful of computing the Betti numbers here by identifying these spaces, certain Bradwell spaces, using Michael Tadeus' work on their Betti numbers, adding all this stuff together. And so you will get is like the bigger formula. So I don't know what's what here. So it's the entries are the only thing I understand is the last line. Again, it has to do with SL3 versus G of 3. Because there is an, and then you can continue look at the literature. And for RS4, it was known, it was computed by Garcia Braga Hines that should be like, it won't fit on that. The result won't fit in here. It's really a lot of stuff together because you have all these different types, like 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 1, 3, 1. I think 3-1 will be somewhat similar to the, but it's higher rank space, etc. And then you have to have similar kind of focusing techniques. It's complicated. And you get the result. But it's mess. Then these guys, Garcia Pran and Hainoth, managed to completely understand the all cases, but it was just a theoretical understanding. So if you press them, maybe RS5, they could write down, but they never managed to do it. Or they never cared to do that. I'm sure it would be very complicated to do that kind of thing. And then the ones which are giving actual formulas, closed formulas, is the work of Schiffman, which does this arithmetic approach, which we will hopefully say something about in lecture 3. And more recently, I mean, so recent that there is no paper out yet, but just an announcement, how we can Easton manage to complete the Dirac-Onescu-Mendel program of computing these DT invariants. And then, as I will discuss in the second lecture, that gives you the Betti numbers. And so this is the nicest for us because, as you will see in the second lecture, we actually have a very nice formula for the Betti numbers, conjecturing on which this proves this last result. Then I can discuss a little bit more about what we know about the homology ring. So we still not very okay. We are okay in this point. Okay, Aristu did it with Michael Tadeusz, and for higher rank was done by Markman. But there are actually a whole other family of X-moduli spaces, like parabolic X-moduli spaces, where you expect these kind of results. And I'm not sure that's really follows from Markman's work. So we still are not very sufficiently understanding the generation theorem. Although recently there was results in the Cleaver variety case. So maybe those techniques by Nevins. Yeah, thank you. And Majority. So maybe those techniques could be used here. Anyway, so we have at least for this kind of Higgs menu space, if you know the ring is generated correctly, then we don't really know much about the cohomology ring except when RS2 with brute force using this kind of description, but multiplicatively, we managed to really the computational technique, the homology ring, and this will be useful in the second talk. Then, this work of Mounia, Grasso, and Chapashvili is just somehow generalizing the Mittens approach to intersection numbers of stable bundles. Gives you certain ideas about what the intersection number should be, and based on that, we did some computations with Andrasvili's and a sort of conjectures, and that was all right. I mean, we had conjectures, we see some conjectures, so we didn't really prove that exactly understand all conjectures. But what's exciting is that now there is another series of papers, which I will discuss in the last lecture. We're starting the thesis work, but now we're going to mathematical results. They can compute the Eclairean theorem in the formula, which in principle, or maybe the generalizations to other kind of peculiar branches should yield this kind of intersection numbers. So in principle, the information here might be possible to compute all the peculiar intersection numbers. Okay, so that I think concludes the talk for today.
Study these Higgs modulus spaces for higher dimensional varieties, let's say surfaces.
Yes, I mean, you mentioned the second step was Simpson. His U.2 was this necessary when you look at any killer metaphor effect or say higher metaphor variety? And then he was interested in saying he did models of them. And he has developed this one again, Hodge theorem, which was very powerful because you will see in the second lecture what this Donabian Hodge theorem will give you is a diffeomorphism with another variety, the character variety, some of topological. Using those ideas, he managed to find some new restrictions of fundamental of Hiller manifolds. But the moduli spaces are terrible, I think. So they're smooth, and so I am scared about them.
I would just think that maybe for surfaces, maybe it's not too bad, since the moduli space of vector bundles is not too terrible.
Yeah, that has some bearing on higher dimensional versions of the geometric elements, and yeah, maybe, you know, like my life, I can see some of this theory starting in earnest, but yeah.
I think that.
Any other questions? All right, let's thank Thomas again.